again, basketball gamers, and welcome to episode number 248 of the NLSC podcast. I'm Andrew, with you as always. This week I'm joined by Kenny. Welcome back to the show, Kenny.
It's good to be back. This is episode number 45 for me, and just a bit of trivia, I suppose. The first jersey I was ever bought was Michael Jordan's number 45, so...
You too. Mine actually was as well, back in year 5, 95, yeah. So.
Oh, cool. So, was it the home or the away jersey?
It was the white home jersey, actually, that I got.
Yeah, I had the same one as well, so cool.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, I guess that was the one that was readily available sort of back in the post-comeback media.
And I suppose there was a lot of hype for Michael Jordan's comeback as well, being, I don't know, was he considered the greatest player of all time at that point, or was it kind of cemented?
I think pretty much it was... a common opinion back then, but certainly when he came back and won those three, the next three titles really solidified it, of course. He won them in a weak era, apparently, so they don't count for anything if you believe some of the things you read, but maybe not best not to do that. Yes, I remember back then, actually, of course, then we got the 45 jersey and he went back to number 23 in those very same playoffs against the Orlando Magic, that very famously, and got fined a lot of money for doing so without telling the league. But all the guys in the class, we'd sort of have a tribute to him every time at school, and we'd look at our watches when it was 9:23 and 45 seconds. It was kind of sad. But and then another one, because of course 9 was his Olympic number, and then of course at 9:45:23 we'd have another sort of shout out to him. Yeah, it's just that and yelling out Sabonis whenever we took a hook shot playing on the blacktop there at my primary school. It was, yeah, I don't know why Sabonis went. Of course, Kareem was naturally the master of the skyhook, but Sabonis was the rookie, the 31-year-old rookie that year, so I guess he was kind of popular. So we are back to talk about our favorite subjects as always, basketball, video games, a little bit of real basketball as well. It's the conference finals. They are upon us. They are tipping off tomorrow from when we're recording this. Actually, it was noted on Twitter, Kenny, by Chuck Cross at Rock Chisler on Twitter, that the NBA Live 18 demo predicted the conference finals.
It did, didn't it? Because were they the four teams that you're able to choose in the demo? Is that how it predicted it? Or
yeah, originally it was the Cavs and the Warriors, and then they added the Rockets and the Celtics, and they are the four left standing. So score one for Live 18 demo, I suppose.
Yeah, very astute. And I think the beginning of NBA Live 16 almost predicted the NBA Finals, if I think the Thunder didn't blow that 3-1 lead.
If they didn't, yeah, that's right. It would have been Cavs and Thunder in the Finals. Yeah, absolutely. So almost the right prediction there as well. I think the only successful one may be NBA Live 06, Dwayne Wade on the cover, and of course the Finals MVP and the champions that year. And actually 2K6 with the... with Shaq on the cover as well, so they both had a member of the championship team.
Yeah, that's NBA Live's been pretty good of late to predict like those kind of things, I guess. Although, yeah, I mean, I guess they didn't technically predict a Thunder Cleveland NBA Finals, but geez, it was so close,
very close, absolutely. And Russell Westbrook, of course, hitting the game-winning shot in that intro sequence. Didn't do that, but he did average a triple-double for two seasons in a row, so they did pick him to go on to great things, I guess.
I used to love breaking that opening sequence, just like taking that shot from mid-court or whatever. It was so much fun.
Did it still go in automatically?
Sometimes it did, sometimes it didn't. It would, like, if it didn't go in or it was like the shot was too ridiculous or something, it would kind of like fade out and get you to do the play again. But, yeah. Oh, it's pretty funny.
I'd never actually tried the sequence break on that. That is pretty funny. It'd be funny if they recorded a secret alternate one where their cover player just walks off the court dejectedly with the loss. That'd be maybe not the best selling point for the game. So
that would have been hilarious, though.
Oh, it would have been. So this week we don't have a lot of news, but we do have a few things to talk about as far as basketball gaming is concerned. Couple of stories from what we've been doing on the virtual hardwood, but we're going to tip things off with some news. It's about NBA Playgrounds 2. The new trailer has come out, a gameplay trailer that also mentions some of the key aspects of this year's game, the sequel to last year's game, of course. And we know that it's coming out May 22nd, which are was revealed with some of the pre-order information a couple of weeks ago. We thought it may have been just a placeholder, but it is coming out May 22nd, which is, as we noted before, is not summer anywhere on Earth.
Definitely isn't. It's particularly not here in Australia, where it's actually getting quite cool. So, yeah, it's interesting that they use the word summer and releasing it in May, to say the very least. Although, in saying that, it's pretty close to summer in America. Like, it's only about maybe a week or like a week and a half away from it. So,
that's what I mean, was close thinking. Enough. That's what I'm thinking. I mean, it's the end of spring in the US and Northern Hemisphere, of course. So that is true. But when they said summer, I thought, oh, it must be maybe July at the earliest, possibly even August. Of course, I guess you want to release it at least a couple of months earlier than the sim games, because that way people are going to play it a bit more, I suppose. But makes you wonder what they're going to do with content updates, because obviously they're not going to be able to have this year's upcoming rookie class in the game, so are they going to be paid DLC again?
Very possibly. I'm hoping that maybe that's something that can patch into the game later, because being paid DLC, yeah, it wouldn't be very good. Wouldn't be very good faith, I suppose.
No, because they did add a lot of content for free last year, admittedly, but when they put out that Hot and Frosty DLC with the three extra playgrounds and the rookies and charged $10 for it, I think it might have been $15 Australian, a lot of people weren't very happy about that, and understandably so, because the game was so thin on content, at least as far as the offline playgrounds to play with and the fact that you'd want the rookie class and that you had to pay for them. It did turn out it wasn't, you know, a move full of goodwill, obviously, and they did take some heat for it, especially with people who weren't really happy with the game to begin with and felt that a few promises had gone unfulfilled. That is what Saber is. The challenge that they're really facing at the moment is people who were let down by Playgrounds. I'm seeing some comments saying that they didn't like the original and no thanks to this one, and or that they're going to wait on it. So, which I can understand, because it did let a few people down, even though I did think it was pretty solid.
It did, and I think that, I guess, the whole post-launch, I guess they had that whole promise about not including DLC unless they really had to.
Yep.
And maybe, I suppose, you could argue that the extra DLC and them charging for it is something that they had to do. I suppose you could, on one side, kind of argue that, but at the same time, it's, I don't know, with all the additional microtransactions in 2K and all that kind of stuff, it just isn't a great business model for me to charge the consumer extra for, you know, extra game, I suppose, that you should be getting at the very beginning.
Absolutely. And again, the lack of playgrounds, I think, was, people may have understood adding the new rookies, whether it had to pay for their likenesses or whatever, but only having the launch with, what, four playgrounds, five playgrounds, something like that, and then a couple more added for free, and then two or three more as paid DLC. It didn't really give that bang for the buck, and people are very sensitive to microtransactions in general with gaming these days, but I think especially with basketball gaming at the moment, with 2K18, and it's not Saber's fault, but with 2K18 being such a gouge and everything, gamers are a little bit fed up with it, so they came in and they tried to do that at the wrong time, I think.
Yeah, definitely. It was all about timing, I think, because, as you said, 2K has kind of been gouging people for the last couple of years. I mean, the problem has really been emphasized in 2K18, but in a sense, it's been kind of happening since, really, I don't know, maybe even 2K16. Like, it's not like something that's just new for 2K all of a sudden. Like,
no,
it actually
no,
has
it's,
been.
I mean, VC dates back to, what, 2K13, I believe, and then it's been steadily increasing, especially on this current generation. So people are very aware of it, sensitive to it, fed up with it, certainly. So anyone else comes along with whether it's EA or Saber trying to do it as well, people are going to have that immediate backlash, even though that it's mostly, a lot of the anger has been directed at 2K, but anyone else who gets in on the act is going to say, well, you're just as bad. So it's not necessarily a good move at all. But we do know that it's coming out May 22nd. We got a gameplay trailer, and it is looking promising. We were talking a little about it shortly before we started recording, and you used the word promising, and that's the word I've used too in articles and whatnot. I do think that it has a great opportunity to be a fantastic game and move on from last year's shortcomings and build on that. And the trailer, it has my attention.
It has mine as well, and particularly since that it actually addresses a lot of the problems that we've mentioned before about playgrounds. Mm-hmm. The fact that the AI is kind of hopeless, that says that they have like new and improved AI. I guess the lack of offline content has been kind of addressed in that trailer as well. And some other kind of, I suppose, polish aspects to the game as well, like new player models and stuff like that. So
animations,
I think, yeah. So I think that Playgrounds 2 is kind of heading in the right direction, at least if that trailer's anything to go by.
I've already written it. In fact, the upcoming week's Friday 5 is about NBA Playgrounds 2 and my hopes for the game, so I won't spoil too much about the article. But I obviously do have various hopes based on what I liked and disliked about last year's game. And I do hope there's less grinding. I didn't really like that you had to level up all the players, because once you've got over 200 players, it's just, especially when there wasn't enough content in last year's game to actually want to play over and over again and select different players and to be able to grind them up. It was just a good idea, but it actually made you feel less like doing it because it was such a grind. Unlocking players also took a long time, and they did push through a patch that changed the frequency of drawing doubles in packs. I remember they changed the odds of packs and made it a little bit better. But I do hope that unlocking plays goes a little bit better this year. I've heard that there are some new systems. There's a few things being posted in the group on Facebook. But one thing I've noticed is that even though we have this trailer and we've got some nice things, like they mentioned the new animation system, the competitive online play, dedicated servers, four-player online co-op, redesigned AI, new power-ups, offline season mode, all that good stuff, there's still not a lot of really in-depth information with the game coming out in 2 weeks, basically, give or take, or a week and a bit, about what it's like. I mean, yes, we've heard redesigned AI, but we've got a gameplay trailer, which is always made to, you know, trailers are supposed to show the game in the best light. But I would like some more in-depth, even if it's just a long blog from Matthew Karcher or what some of the developers compiling some information about the game. I would like to see a little bit more and some more videos rather than just a couple of trailers before the game comes out.
I would too, but at the same time, I don't think they're necessarily obligated to do that because they are coming in at a lower price point than, say, a 2K or a NBA Live even. Mm. So I guess I would love to have more information about it, but it's not as dire as it would be. It's not as necessary as it would be for like a company like 2K to release specs, because if they were to release like a kind of ambiguous trailer like that 2 weeks out, they would get all sorts of criticism for that.
Oh, so yeah.
I'm guessing I think I would like to see more information, but I don't think the expectations kind of necessitate it, I suppose. I guess that's what I'm saying.
I mean, I suppose that's fair. They are an indie company, I believe, basically, somewhere that's certainly not working on a lot of big AAA titles like a Visual Concepts or an EA Sports, Electronic Arts. So that is a fair point. I do hope that the game is better than last year, because it was solid, but as I've said before, it felt like it could have been so much more. It could have been the definitive arcade game of this generation, especially with Street and Jam nowhere to be seen, unfortunately. And it really didn't live up to that. And obviously people are skeptical and saying, why is a sequel coming out so quickly? I do think that, as I said before, it is actually a fine that it's coming out this quickly, because we talked about it, you and I, you brought up the example of Street Fighter 2 and all the different versions of Street Fighter 2 that came out. NBA Jam Tournament Edition came out the year after the original NBA Jam. On Fire Edition came out after the reboot in 2010. So I think it's fine that they're doing that, as I've said before, but it's just important that if there is going to be a Playgrounds 3, that it comes 2 years later, that we don't need a new game next year as well, because arcade games really shouldn't be coming out every year.
No, they probably shouldn't be. And I think Playgrounds 2, I think it's being released so hot in the heels of the first one because they're trying to get momentum in the market. Mm. At least that's what I speculate anyway. If they left it for a few years and just kind of, I guess, left the consumer with Playgrounds 1, then yeah, I think they would be forgotten about pretty quickly. So I think this is them trying to get on the front foot and kind of make a more improved version of the previous game so that they can kind of stay in the forefront in the minds of the consumer.
And in regards to coming out so quickly and not updating the original game, from the sounds of things with the redesigned AI and such, that's not necessarily things you can patch into a game, especially a season mode and things like that. So you really need to redesign the game, maybe not from the ground up, but certainly a new build that you can't necessarily push through with a patch. So it makes sense that they're pushing it out as quickly as possible. And yeah, I do hope it succeeds. I'm going to pick it up, obviously, because I want to cover it for the site. But I would like to remain optimistic at this point, basically.
I think I might pick it up as well, even though I have two pre-orders around that time. I think, 22nd? I think the 25th is when the remaster of Dark Souls and Detroit Become Human come out. Ah. They both come out. 25th, so yeah, I'll find a way. I'll make sure I get it at launch, and so I can give my initial impressions. And I'm also kind of hyped about it as well. It'd be great to have like a new basketball game,
as many basketball games as possible. There's another one obviously out on Steam Early Access that we've talked about before, and we'll touch on a little bit later as well. So the more companies throwing their hat into the ring with the basketball games, obviously we've got two developers doing the big sim games in EA and 2K, which is traditional. But if some other developers can come out with these arcade games or things like Basketball Classics, of course, then, yeah, it's more basketball gaming content. Reminds me a little bit of what we grew up with.
Yeah, definitely. And I think those other games, such as Basketball Classics and even Playgrounds, they can kind of fill holes in the market that 2K and Live aren't necessarily filling. So, yeah, I think it's only a good thing, really.
Still waiting for the reboot of Shaq Fu, though, from Saber.
I am too, actually. okay, you said that sarcastically. Never mind.
So that's pretty much it for the news this week. So we will talk a little bit about what we've been playing in our week in basketball gaming.
Oh, that's a devastating dunk in his face. Oh, he just stole his heart with that dunk right there.
So, Kenny, I was playing Fallout 4 earlier this week, and I was taking on some raiders in an abandoned barn, and I found a basketball, and that's my way of mentioning Fallout on the NLC podcast this week.
I thought you were going to say, that's been my week in basketball gaming.
It was very close, actually, because I hadn't really gotten back into Fallout 4. I just had the urge to play it again, and I'm enjoying it, as I've mentioned before, I think, on the podcast, about basketball gaming, talking about a Fallout RPG, that Fallout 4 wasn't necessarily all I wanted it to be, and I think you said the same thing as well, being a bit of a fan of the series yourself.
Yeah, I mean, New Vegas was where it was at for me.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that was a tough act to follow, but I think 4 is good within its own right. It's kind of like, I hate to draw this comparison, but it's kind of like the Mass Effect Andromeda of the series.
Right, right.
Even though it wasn't like as universally panned as Andromeda, it was kind of like when I have this discussion, it's kind of like Andromeda to me was like the Star Trek movies, what they're like to traditional Star Trek fans. So yeah.
So I've been playing Fallout 4 this week, obviously. Mainly just, I wanted to make that joke about seeing that, because I did actually come across a basketball floating around in one of the barns when I was doing it. But the point is, I got caught up with the game again and hadn't really, I'd taken a bit of a break from playing Live or 2K or anything like that. But I did end up playing 2K with the guys on Friday night. Here's the funny thing is that, as you probably saw in our Facebook group for the where we organize all our meetups and everything to play, is that ZZ said his semester had finished. That's ZZ Cool J, of course. That his semester had finished and he was up for some games. And he didn't actually end up coming on. So it was a good rib on his part. He got us to play 2K again after we said we wouldn't play Prime anymore. So good one, ZZ. So he ended up miscommunication there or didn't end up joining us as originally planned. So it was the four of us. It was myself, Arcane, Ben, and Valor and the X, and we played three games and we won the last one. Unfortunately, we blew the first one in overtime. I have to put my hand up on that one. We could have dribbled it out in regulation, but unfortunately, I had a pass. I called for a pass that got picked off, and they hit a shot to send it into overtime. So my bad on that one. So it was more frustration, and we ended up playing the one more game. We won the final game that we played, and I think we all just decided after that, that's it. Like, we'd already decided that we thought we'd give it one more shot, and you know what? We took a few breaks in 2K17 and came back, and it felt fresh, and we enjoyed it again.
That hasn't happened with 2K18?
Has not happened with 2K18, unfortunately. It kind of did when we did it earlier this year. We took a short break at the beginning of the year, came back into it for a few weeks, but after this latest break, no, it's not happening for us this year, unfortunately, in 2K Pro-Am. One funny thing we did notice, though, looking at the history in the smartphone of the teams that we have played, we did play a team a few weeks back when we were still playing that were called We'll Never Disband or something, and they've since disbanded. So, liars, everyone. So what we ended up doing was actually going back to Ben's My Court and playing 2-on-2. And that when we played a 7-game series, Ben and I versus Valor and the X, back and forth, and Valor and the X have to tip my hat to them. They got the job done in the 7th game. Pretty competitive series all in all. It's probably one of the most fun I've had in 2K18 online all year, playing, just messing around and playing 2-on-2 on the My Court.
That kind of makes sense, because I think one of the most fun occasions we had in 2K16 was when we had like that the NLSC versus the NLSC Pro-Am game, where we coordinated that and like somehow managed to get it after, you know, a couple of failures, I suppose.
A couple of tries, but we actually managed to hook up and play each other, yeah.
Yeah, so I can see why, like, kind of having that game within our circle was kind of more fun than a lot of 2K experiences. So
also, yeah, none of us have a cheesy archetype either, so that was fun. I actually dunked. It's amazing because I can't dunk in Pro-Am or my career very often, but it actually let me dunk in a couple of my court games. So that's been my big bane this year, because as you remember last year, I liked being the playmaker who threw down big fancy dunks.
Yeah, that was fun. That was fun to watch. What I will say is, though, you're not the only one who can't throw down dunks this year while looking at the 2K League.
Mm.
Ooh, shots fired.
Dang.
I just wanted to get that in there.
But no, it was fun, and maybe if we do feel like getting together, that's going to be the way to go. Just 2-on-2 and maybe a bit of horse and all the other shooting games in my court. I think it's going to be a lot more fun than trying... more fun than the playground. I mean, obviously it's like playing 2-on-2 on the playground, but at least this way you can take it in turns being the home team and the away team and starting with the ball, things like that. So it's an option. So it's nice to have that in the back pocket as well. Of course, you know, maybe getting on and playing some more Live 18 Pro-Am and the live events at some point as well. So it's just nice to have that option, I suppose. And I don't like all the changes they've made to my court this year. Especially, I mean, just little things like being able to pick up a ball and having the rack there and everything, got to run to the other end of the court to get all the other balls and everything. It's just weird little design flaws like that. But I do like that they added these little mini games and made it easier to go to other people's my court and have a game. It's, you know, it is fun.
Yeah, and it's good that you can have that alternative, because after all, I mean, pick up basketball should be fun. Like, it's doesn't always have to be a grind or, you know, so painstaking as 2K Pro-Am can tend to be if you're having a frustrating time. So yeah, I think it's a good idea to kind of get away from that experience every now and then and just, you know, have a bit of a laugh with your friends. So
absolutely. No point forcing the whole issue if you're not playing something you're not enjoying. That's just silly. What the definition of insanity, doing the same thing and expecting different results, I suppose. And we've been insane enough this year, I think, so we might stick to that. As far as offline stuff, I haven't really done a lot of single player stuff with Live or 2K this week. I did play a game of Ultimate Team after we finished our session 2-on-2 and Pro-Am, and I lost for the first time in about 20 or 30 games because it was on the harder difficulty level, the challenge, and I just wasn't really paying attention, and suddenly they mounted a comeback in the fourth, and damn, I wasted a contract on a loss. So I needed to pay more attention that time. But yeah, they've got some new content in there. They've got the playoff content, obviously. I'm guessing they're going to have the conference finals challenges coming up this week as well, if they're not in the game already. I haven't checked in the past 24 hours. New Team of the Week challenges or Team of the Year challenges, and new Masters challenges as well. I think they got the centers in there, so you can get a Shaq and a Wilt if you haven't got them through the Legends. So plenty to play through the off season, I guess, which is probably something I'll be doing.
Yeah, it's something I might be doing as well once I've gotten past God of War and a few other games I have that are currently in the lineup. But yeah, I am kind of looking forward to going into more depth with Live Ultimate Team, because it has been a fun mode. It's probably been like the best mode in NBA Live 18. So
definitely, yeah, the deepest, because franchise just isn't what Dynasty used to be, sadly.
No, it isn't.
Did you see what X did with picking up Joe Ingles in Ultimate Team?
Yeah, so he's got like a lineup with Ingles and Steven Adams and a few other people. Yeah, it's kind of interesting because I didn't think X liked Joe Ingles that much. But
well, how can you not like Jingles? I mean, that's just blasphemy, really.
Yeah, I mean, I guess everybody's kind of turned around on him a bit after his kind of performances in the playoffs. Or even like just his performance throughout the year, he's been fantastic for the Jazz and it's become a really big part of what they're doing there, and they're a really interesting side now, and he's a big part of it. So
setting records, indeed, which, you know, obviously we've had Aussies in the NBA before, but to set records, that's pretty cool.
It is, particularly in the playoffs. That 27-point performance, was it? Was the one that set the record?
Seven threes in a single playoff game, a Jazz record.
Yeah, that's crazy. I just hope that's something that can translate over to the Boomers play.
Mm.
And I think, who's it, Andre Lemanis is still the coach there?
I think so, yeah.
I just hope he gives Joe Ingles the green light from beyond the arc, because he's obviously one of the best three-point shooters in the world at the moment. Well, so
limitless range, why badge. Not? he's got all the badges, I guess. He's been grinding in my career. So we've mentioned Basketball Classics a couple of times on the podcast. Still looking to set up an interview with Nemo Gamo. I do apologize for dragging my feet on that, trying to set up times with the guys there. I know if you're listening, I know you're keen. I'm keen to have you on the show and chat to you a little bit more about the history of the game. As I've said before, I think it's a really good concept to bring back this 8-bit style with modern mechanics and have that throwback game as an alternative to the ultra-realistic or the attempts at the ultra-realistic modern games. And you said that you've spent a bit of time with it. A few preliminary thoughts.
So I played, I think, maybe one or two games with it, and yeah, I did really like it. It was particularly difficult, I found, which isn't a bad thing. Like, it was my first time playing it, so it's bound to have like a bit of a learning curve there. But I did enjoy the experience, and I guess I was kind of thrown off a bit because I chose the Bulls thinking it was going to be the classic Bulls because it was a classic looking game, and it wasn't the classic Bulls. So,
you didn't go back to the 91. You didn't select the 91 Bulls on that one.
No, I chose the current Bulls, which is not a fun time for anybody at the moment.
No, not at all.
I probably should have chosen the Nuggets since like they are my team, but yeah, I think nostalgia kind of got the best of me there, and I thought, oh yeah, I used to always choose the Bulls in the 90s, so why not?
Yeah, you got to scroll back to the classic 91 Bulls Chicago team they got in there. Not the Bulls. Don't want to mention. I don't want to imply copyright infringement or anything like that. So.
Oh no, of course no.
It's like the Super Dunk Shot, the Japanese version of World League Basketball and NCAA Basketball by HAL Laboratories. Chicago Bulls and the Los Angeles Lakers, the Boston Celeries, and all the
the Celeries.
The Celeries with Birdie and Parrish with a double R and other things that just would not fly today at all. I don't know how that happened back in the 90s, but it did. But yeah, so would you agree? A good concept, a good throwback, an alternative experience to what we have for the more realistic games these days.
Yeah, it's a fun game for, I guess, 10 to 20 minutes here and there, and I think that's pretty much what it's aimed for. Like, I don't think it's necessarily going to give you, like, the deep experience of the simulation games, but it definitely fills a need in the market, so, yeah, I'm all for it.
I know they are looking at doing the season mode, because, of course, it's still in early access at the moment, so there'll be some kind of season and tournament mode, etc. At the moment, they've got a story mode with the intro that's very much like Mega Man 2. A nice throwback to a few 8-bit titles there, actually. Some really nice animation, kind of that Ninja Gaiden anime kind of feel to it, which is pretty cool. And, of course, the dunking cutscenes as well. And they've pushed through a couple of updates which have adjusted some of the lengths of the tip-off and everything. So they're still tweaking things like that, as well as looking to add to add those extra features, season mode, etc. But it really has impressed me how polished the game is, even in the early stages of early access.
Yeah, it played really well when I had my game with it. And I guess from looking at it, you can really tell that the creators of it have a real appreciation for like that kind of nostalgia feel, and they had like a passion for like the video games of that era. So I really appreciate that, and I think it's really cool.
No, I definitely agree. So it'd be good to get them on the show and talk a little bit about that. I would still try to put together a video or some kind of feature. I was going to do either a write up or a video. I'd prefer to do a video because I want to do some more video content for the site, which just takes a while, as you know, having dabbled yourself in the past trying to do video features, how a few minutes can take a lot of editing. But I definitely want to help spread some awareness of this game, and a shout out to Razer once again for bringing it to my attention, because it's just really cool. I mean, we've seen concepts like Shovel Knight and Treasure Adventure Game and all those other indie titles and such like that have gone retro and brought the retro experience mixed it with the modern mechanics and modern game design, and stamped out some of the design flaws from back in the day when games were in their relative infancy. So it is really cool to have that alternative experience. And if we can have people like them, Nemo Gamer, doing that, and Saber Interactive doing Playgrounds, we can have these alternate experiences. And it's, as we've said a couple of times already on the show, great to see. So that's pretty much it for Basketball Gaming this week, I believe. I don't think I did much more that isn't repeating myself about Fallout 4.
And I don't think I did a whole lot more either, basketball-wise. So, yeah, it's a pretty dry week, I suppose, as far as basketball gaming is concerned.
Not a lot of news, not a lot of stuff that we've done this week. It's kind of that lull, but we do have the conference finals in the real NBA, so I guess we can get to that. It's predicted by the NBA Live 18 demo, as we said, so that was pretty cool. It's the Cavs and the Celtics in the East, and in the West, it's the Rockets and the Warriors. Cavs just obliterated the Raptors in the second round. The Raptors not looking like a first seed at all, unfortunately. Remains to be seen what happens with them moving forward, but Cavs in a pretty good position to make the finals yet again.
Yeah, definitely. It would be a bad idea to, I guess, count out the Celtics at this point, but at the same time, LeBron just has the history of getting through. So it's, I think if the Celtics are due for a letdown, it would be right about now.
Yeah. Missing Kyrie, of course, and Hayward out since the horrific injury in the first game of the season against the Cavs, funnily enough. The season will perhaps begin and end against the Cleveland Cavaliers and LeBron. I've got the Cavs winning this in five. I think the Celtics can at least steal a game.
I'm going with my heart on this one. I told you before that my predictions are going to be from the heart and not necessarily from the head, so I'm saying the Celtics in seven,
Be
slightly contrarian. I think
I'd love to say it.
Yeah, me too, and that's pretty much why I'm predicting it.
Yeah.
They've had a great run to this point. They have a great bunch of young players doing great things, like Jason Tatum, Terry Rozier. They have other players like Al Horford and our own Aaron Baines as well, all kind of helping the team cause. So I really hope that they make it through the NBA Finals, but it's a very optimistic prediction, I think. I
believe that would be the 21st NBA Finals that the Celtics have been a part of. They've won 17 of their past 20, I believe, if I have the numbers correct.
It's so weird, like, wanting the Celtics in the NBA Finals so they can break parity. Like, it's just, yeah, I never thought I would have wanted that.
I actually saw it was in JB Hi-Fi the other day, and I happened to be in the DVD section looking for a gift for someone, and I saw they have a a pack out, the Warriors and Cavs trilogy, they're calling it, which is basically the finals championship DVD collection from the last 3 years, just an all-in-one pack. And people say back in the 80s that, it was always the Lakers and the Celtics, but they only met three times and only twice consecutively. Like, there's a lot of different teams trading off. Like, it wasn't always the Lakers and the Celtics. They were the two teams of the era, but not always squaring off against each other. And I think that's what people have... Certainly, I can only speak for myself, but seeing the same thing every year and feeling like it's an inevitability from the beginning of the season, it just feels wasteful. It's been hard to get invested in the season sometimes, knowing that it's going to end up the same way.
It is a little bit hard, and I think particularly when you don't have a team in the playoffs, it is even harder because, even when your team is the eighth seed, you kind of still have like this hope that, maybe we're the ones that caused the boil over this year.
Yeah, absolutely.
That create history. But when that's not happening, all you can really hope for is lottery picks for the next season. And it begins like this whole cycle where you're optimistic for the new season. And then towards the middle, you kind of have a lull. And then maybe I'm just saying this as a Nuggets fan, because it's happened to me like the last two seasons where they've bowed out with like the last game or the last two games or something like that. But it seems like I'm caught in the cycle anyway, of having optimism for the new season and then it not turning out how I wanted it to. So,
Definitely in that boat with the Bulls at the moment and Garpax, and hoping that they don't, trade away the lottery pick for a bag of beans or something. Not even magic beans, just regular beans. Wouldn't put it past them, unfortunately. And also, I guess, the fact there's been injuries and that no one's really been able to step up and have other elite teams in the East, especially, and that even out West, when we had the anticlimactic finals, Western Conference finals last year, thanks Zaza again for that. You just feel like, and you can call us haters or whatever, and yeah, I mean, I certainly dislike it. I'm not saying that that people can't enjoy the game or that the players aren't great players involved. But for someone who's not a fan of either team to see the same teams in the finals each and every year, especially while my favorite team is just floundering and doing who knows what with its rebuilding effort. Like you say, at least if you're in the playoffs, you can get excited and think, well, maybe we'll be the upset or we'll make a little bit of noise, or it's just going to show like, yes, we're going to take things. This is a promising step to the next level. But when you're lottery bound favorite team and you're just watching the same teams all the time, investment wanes a little bit, unfortunately.
Yeah, it definitely does. And I think one of the more interesting stories of the NBA playoffs for me so far was the New Orleans Pelicans. Just seeing Anthony Davis just going crazy in games, Drew Holiday, and seeing the return of playoff Rondo. That was a lot of fun. And I was kind of disappointed that they didn't give the Warriors a bit more of a fight. They ended up, what was it? Did they steal one game?
They took one game, so they didn't get swept.
Okay, it was one. Yeah, so I mean, they did take one game, but I was kind of hoping that would be like a six or a seven, because I thought the Pelicans kind of had the personnel to kind of upset the Warriors in a couple of games. But yeah, unfortunately, that one didn't pan out. But
what do you make of DeMarcus Cousins? Because obviously he was been out for most of the season. Injured before the All-Star break, if I recall correctly, and Pelicans still played very well, and that pick that the Bulls owned just went lower and lower. Thank you, Garfax, for that. And of course, could relate that back to the Bulls. Rondo playing well for a team that's not the Bulls. But, what's the future with DeMarcus Cousins in New Orleans? Because they arguably don't need him. They seem to play well, maybe arguably even better without him.
It's tough to say, because I think... Yeah, I don't know. We haven't seen enough of a sample size, I don't think, to see how DeMarcus Cousins plays with them like during a full season. I think guys with talent like him and Anthony Davis, I think they can make it work. And they weren't they teammates during college? Wasn't that like the big thing about them?
Oh, was it?
I'm not sure whether it was him and Anthony Davis or I don't know. Might have to look that one up.
I'll look that up as we just move on quickly to the Western Conference Finals, I guess. I said last week's show when Ben and I were talking about it, I feel like if the Rockets are ever going to win or even get to the finals, I think this is going to be the year. I think they've got a fantastic opportunity. If it doesn't happen this year, will it ever?
Yeah, it's an interesting case for the Rockets because I think that they could have a few more successful seasons, I suppose, but it really depends on what your opinion is as far as like what their ceiling is. Like, yeah, I could see this being their ceiling, but at the same time, I could kind of see them being perennial contenders for, I guess the conference finals. So, yeah, I don't know. I think in a lot of ways, this is like a very kind of pivotal season for how their franchise is built. So, I guess that's all I really have to say on that. Sorry, on a bit.
No worries. I'm throwing out there maybe as just a bold declaration of sorts, but I'm reminded of teams, obviously, and maybe painful to bring up, but the 2009 Denver Nuggets, for example, they made it to the Western Conference Finals, but that was basically the pinnacle of that squad, and there were definitely obviously reasons for that and trades that happened. Melo left a couple of years later and whatnot, but you know, once you reach the conference finals, or even the NBA finals, there's no guarantee that you'll necessarily be back.
That's true. And I think and another instance of a team that I guess kind of didn't quite make it to that next level, so to speak, was also the Clippers in their recent runs.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
Because they never made it out of the second round, and they always touted to be like one of the top five teams in the league. So, yeah, maybe this is the case for the Rockets. Maybe if they can't get past the Warriors here, maybe they don't have a better shot at it.
Because they're going to have home court. They finished, 7 or 8 games better than the Warriors this year with the Warriors' injuries. Curry's obviously back now. So I've actually got the Rockets winning it in 7. So Rockets fans can get on me if they lose because I've jinxed them. But I will take the Rockets in 7. But if they don't do it, I'm not sure where the future is for the club.
I'm saying the Rockets in 6 because I think they have to do it in 6.
Mm.
They have home court, don't they?
They have
7.
Yep.
So, saying 7.
Rockets in 7? Okay, well, we will see. Yeah. You can blame us Rockets fans if we have jinxed your team, basically. So
I just assumed that Golden State were the number one seed.
Whoops. Yeah, Rockets' best record in the league, 65-17 this year.
Yeah, I really want them to win because, I mean, I'm not the hugest fan of James Harden, but they kind of have a few other players here and there that I just really like Chris Paul. I really like Clint Capella's game and the fact that he's kind of more of a traditional center in a modern league, but somehow making it work with a team that just jacks up threes.
Yeah, interesting.
I also like Luka Mbarumute. I think he's a kind of an underrated perimeter defender, and
they've got NBA champion Trevor Ariza.
Oh yeah, him as well. Yeah, he's a good player. I
remember when Ariza went to the Rockets after his first run with the Rockets, and he was having that first couple of weeks of the new season with the Rockets. He was just tearing it up. I think I was doing the rosters at the time, so everyone wanted me to really up his ratings, and I said I'll wait. And he came back to earth a little bit after the first couple of weeks. It was a Ronald Murray situation, a Flip Murray situation, I think, a little bit. But he's still a very solid player.
Yeah, he is. Great complimentary player. I don't think he was ever a star, but a good second or third option to have, I suppose. I just think this series is going to be dull, though. It's going to be a lot of three-point shooting, a lot of basketball I don't like watching. So, yeah. I'm definitely interested if the Rockets can get past the Warriors, because I at least want one new team in the NBA Finals this year.
I'd definitely like to see that. Of all the teams left that I'd like to see win the most, it probably would be the Celtics. Shout out to John Jousming, of course, on that one. I'm sure he's hoping for the same thing. A quick clarification from earlier. Both Davis and Cousins went to Kentucky, but not at the same time.
Okay. So they have that connection, but I thought they were like teammates at one point. But
were they a dynamic duo in my team or something like that? Might have been what you were thinking of.
Maybe I'm thinking of a different player, though, that was teammates with Cousins or Davis or something. Mm. Yeah, I'm not sure.
But I guess either way, they're out of the playoffs and their future is yet to be determined. But so of all the teams left, I guess we are picking the Rockets and the Cavs or the Celtics. I do think the Rockets have a pretty good shot at it. If they get past the Warriors, I do think they are winning it all. Certainly, I think they have to, but I think they're certainly capable.
I think they are too. And I guess it's something that I just really want to see is the Warriors not being there, because I guess I'm a hater in that sense. Like, I would be okay with LeBron making it into the finals again, but for some reason I can't want the Warriors to do it. There's just something about that team that's just pure arrogance. I think it's Draymond Green, and I think it's partly Kevin Durant as well. So,
oh well, you can tweet at him and get him to tweet you back on his burner account, if indeed he remembers to log into the right one this time. A team that is out, of course, are the Toronto Raptors, swept by the Cavaliers in the second round. And of course, you know, you can talk about LeBron, you can talk about the Raptors maybe not being built for the playoffs. But the blade has fallen on Dwayne Casey, basically, as many of us predicted, I guess. And whether it's fair or not, he's you can't fire all the players very easily anyway. So you end up firing the coach, and that's the classic adage, and that's what's happened to him here.
Yeah, I guess that's where the axe has fallen, and it's kind of unfortunate, but at the same time, not completely unexpected, because I think he's in a bit between a rock and a hard place, because the last couple of seasons getting eliminated by the LeBron James team, which is pretty much almost a foregone conclusion at this point. But I can see him landing a gig somewhere else for like a team that is kind of up and coming or is looking to build something. So I kind of hope he gets a gig somewhere else.
He's obviously well regarded. He's got the Coaches Association Coach of the Year, whether he ends up getting the NBA Coach of the Year award as well is yet to be seen. So the Raptors, I think maybe the Clippers of the East, perhaps, right down to the way they struggled in those early years, I guess, in the 90s, before Vince Carter got there. Just being able to have this great regular season, but not having the mentality or the talent to get through the second round. And I guess with the mentality situation and playing better than some of your parts and everything, some of that does have to fall on Casey. I mean, you look what Brad Stevens has done without Kyrie in the lineup, and even before training for Kyrie Irving, certainly Isaiah Thomas was an all-star player there for the Celtics. But I do think Stevens is a fantastic coach, and probably, I guess we'll get to it in a little bit if we talk about our award predictions, but probably the coach of the year.
Yeah, I'd say so as well, because, I mean, I know you can't take playoff performance as, like, you can't really take it into consideration when doing the regular season awards, but he pretty much coached that Celtics side past the 76ers. So, with all the talent that the Sixers had, he was still able to outcoach them, which I thought was brilliant. As far as like the Raptors are concerned, I think it's a harsh criticism, but I think they had a lot of overrated pieces. As far as like, you have a guy like Serge Ibaka, who was kind of like a borderline all-star with Oklahoma City, but then kind of bounced from the Magic to the Raptors and kind of hasn't really been the same since, or at least like kind of not in that same consideration.
Mm. No, it makes sense.
And
I mean, there was that discussion about DeRozan and Lowry both kind of indicated they didn't really have the confidence to get past LeBron. And obviously LeBron is, in my opinion, not the greatest player of all time, but certainly one of the greatest and the best player in the NBA at the moment, and having a fantastic year in his 15th season, as everybody wants to remind us. Obviously it's a tough task to get past him, even with a team that's not as strong as previous years. But for them to come in and not even really believe in themselves, I mean, that does, again, kind of falls down on them as players, certainly, but even coaching, the preparation, and, part of being a coach is to motivate and have the players believe and draw up systems that really can make a team work better than the sum of its parts. We've certainly seen that happen many times before, and underdog teams take down the favored candidate, the favored contender. So, yeah, it's maybe it's a bit hard on Casey, but I think the Raptors, it's probably, wouldn't surprise me if they make some sweeping changes or try to maybe even blow it up and start over, because it seems that 59 wins and a second round exit is maybe the pinnacle of what they can do.
Yeah, I could see them starting over as well. I think one of the big moves they might have to make would be to try and move Lowry, because I believe that they should probably like build this thing around DeMar DeRozan, because he is like the all-star player.
Yep.
Maybe to a lesser extent, Valanciunas as well, although I think he could be a valuable trading chip. Although, it's really hard to say, because I don't know how well Valanciunas actually works in the current NBA setup, like with everybody shooting threes and whatnot. So
absolutely. Yeah,
it's tough. I think he could be a good trading chip, but at the same time, maybe the need's just not there, so maybe they'll have to stick with him.
Well, I guess they'll see what happens with the Raptors, but would not surprise me if they make some sweeping changes in the offseason. So getting to the awards as we wrap up this week's podcast, thought we'd throw out some predictions there. Rookie of the Year. I mean, let's start with the really contentious one. The supposedly not a rookie, Ben Simmons versus Donovan Mitchell. Or maybe you prefer Lonzo Ball, for some people out there. people talk about co-rookie of the year, et cetera, and I understand what Mitchell has done, but seeing just what an impact Simmons has had on a team that was trusting the process and averaging a triple-double through that big winning streak, never been done before, not even by any of the greats, not LeBron, not Magic, not Oscar Robertson, nothing like that through a... or Russell Westbrook, nothing through a... through a winning streak like that. You know, I'm biased because he's obviously Australian. He spent some time growing up in my hometown, was coached by the best player I ever played against or went to high school with. So I'm pretty biased, but I'll give it to Ben Simmons.
Wait, this is a contentious one? I know that Donovan Mitchell has a pretty good case, and I would even argue that Jason Tatum? Yeah.
Yep.
I would argue that he would have a really good case as well, because I think a lot of people have kind of slept on his season.
Definitely, you see what he's doing in the playoffs. It's yeah. Certainly.
But I think it has to be Ben Simmons, because I think this season he has proved that he's pretty much the future of the league, and he's going to be the next big thing if injuries don't intervene. So I'd have to give it to him.
So we're not going to be big ballers. We're not going to give it to Lonzo Ball.
Honorable mention.
Honorable mention. Such haters we are. MVP, another contentious one. Obviously, you've got your Nick Wrights and your Shannon Sharps talking about LeBron being this good in his 15th season. James Harden for me, I think.
Yeah, I'd say James Harden as well. With honorable mention to Anthony Davis, and
indeed,
I think LeBron always has to be in the conversation, because he does put up some excellent numbers even in his 15th season. And but yeah, I think Russell Westbrook's MVP last year was kind of contentious, because a lot of people thought it should be James Harden. So I think this season's almost like a carry on from the last season, where he maybe should have won it in some people's eyes. So that's just the way I see the votes falling, and I think he definitely deserves it.
We touched on it a couple of minutes ago, but Coach of the Year, I think we both seem to favour Brad Stevens.
I wrote down Mike D'Antoni, but I think, I'm definitely in the Brad Stevens camp now. I know you can't take playoffs into consideration, but yeah, the Sixers series just showed what a great coach he is, so I'm all for him winning it.
Well, the Celtics had a pretty good season as it is. They did have the best record in the league, a long winning streak there at the start after that horrific injury to Hayward. He's obviously got great systems, can get the most out of his players, obviously developing rookies and other young players as well. Yeah, I think he is one of the best coaches in the NBA, and it would not be out of the question for him to get it, even if the Celtics didn't, obviously they didn't, finish with the best record.
Yeah, he's coached them through a lot of adversity, and I don't think that could be overlooked. So, yeah, give him the Coach of the Year, definitely.
So I'm just reading down the list. So a little bit out of order, I guess, on Wikipedia. Executive of the Year, Danny Ainge. For obviously trading down for Tatum and
yeah,
and of course getting Kyrie as well. It's also one of those awards that people kind of get after a couple of years of good moves, necessarily, rather than just what they've just done in the past 12 months. He's made some great moves in the past 12 months, but over the past few years, Danny Ainge seems to win every trade he makes. So,
wouldn't surprise me. I guess I never considered Danny Ainge, I suppose, but he's a good pick. For some reason, I've written down Daryl Morey because I think that's just my default at this point.
That's a very strong possibility as well.
Yeah, I could see Danny Ainge winning it as well. I'll be slightly contrarian though and say Daryl Morey.
Daryl Morey, yeah, can see it. Defensive Player of the Year.
This one I think is a bit more grey because I don't know. I think there are a lot of good contenders and a lot of good arguments, but I'm willing to go with Rudy Gobert this year.
Rudy Gobert. I think
he's been a strong contender. He was a strong contender last year, and I don't know. I think the other. I mean, you could argue, I suppose, maybe Draymond Green again. Although I saw some people arguing Kevin Durant there for a little while, which I think is kind of a bit silly. But
I think because he was leading the league in blocks at one point and has upped some of his defensive stats. I was thinking Anthony Davis because he's had a pretty good defensive year as well. And maybe some vote for him not getting the MVP, maybe just getting some award for the year he's had because he's had a pretty fantastic year. And his defensive stats have been pretty good as well, so I'm going to go with the brow.
Yeah, I wouldn't feel upset if he won it either, honestly. Like, I wouldn't think it was a great travesty. Yeah, either him or Gobert, one of those two.
The best of the bench, the sixth man of the year. This is always a tough one for me to pick, I find.
I think this one's pretty clear-cut for me, though. I would have to go with Lou Williams.
Lou Williams?
Yeah, I think I looked at his stats recently, and I'm pretty sure he only like started maybe 15 games or something along that range, and he still averaged over 20 points a game. So I don't know. I know he wasn't on a team, but it's kind of hard to go past those kind of numbers.
So Ricky Pierce numbers coming off the bench and scoring 20 plus. Yeah, I might have to copy off your paper and then pick Lou Williams as well. That's a most improved.
I mean, I would like to say Joe Ingles for this one, but it has to be Victor Oladipo. Because nobody else has come out and been a pure superstar like he has this year. From not total obscurity, but kind of, I think he was always seen as like a player, kind of, he had his flaws, but he was like a rising star in the league. But this year, he's more or less cemented his status as an up-and-coming star, so... Yeah, I'd say Oladipo.
And the other thing with him is, of course, playing basically the same minutes, but just going to a new team and being given the opportunity and blossoming into that role and becoming an all-star. And he wasn't all-star, wasn't he? It was just the dunk contest.
I'm pretty sure he was an all-star. You might have to double-check that, but if he wasn't, I'd be very surprised. That said, I didn't really pay attention to the all-star weekend, as this might show, but yeah. He's definitely deserving.
So, named an Eastern Conference All-Star Reserve. That's right. I forgot about that because I did tune out of the game when they started tossing up threes and then tune back in when they got close again in the fourth quarter. So, definitely a strong candidate for that. The rest of the awards are basically your Sportsmanship and Teammate of the Year and the Lifetime Achievement Award. Lifetime Achievement Award awarded to the NBA player who had a lifetime of achievement in the NBA. It was Bill Russell. I think that's a new award, is it not?
It might be. I've never heard of it before.
Yes, last year he was the inaugural winner.
So that was Russell. Okay.
Michael Jordan might as well. I mean, come on. He put the NBA on the map.
He put the NBA on the map. The first winner, I think you said, was Bill Russell, right?
Russell, so yeah.
I'm thinking a little bit earlier. I'm thinking possibly Wilt Chamberlain myself.
Possibly. I mean... obviously George Mikan really was the first, the league's first superstar. So the fact that they gave it to Russell, I mean, obviously the most championships, maybe it's one of the ones they want to give to someone who's, you know, they don't want to do any posthumous award winners for the Lifetime Achievement Award. Maybe.
I suppose, but you know, when you talk about people that really kind of defined the game and changed it, you can't really look much further than Wilt and Michael Jordan, of
True.
Course. But I think Wilt was really kind of the first one, not the first one to do it, but he did it before Jordan anyway.
Mm.
You know, back in a time, he was so dominant. I looked at his stats the other day and I was just like, those are real stats. They're not 2K stats.
Yeah, they are very video game-like. And we talk about some of the things that LeBron is doing in his 15th season. what Will Chamberlain was doing in many of his seasons was quite ridiculous. Teammate of the Year, I'm just going to give that to Bobby Portis for obvious reasons. Why not give him the Sportsmanship Award too?
So Teammate of the Year for me was Steven Adams for letting Russell Westbrook get all those rebounds.
Ah, of course.
Sportsmanship.
Oh, let's give that to Durant for all the technicals.
I was thinking Draymond Green, but yeah.
Maybe they can award it to the Warriors in general. It's just
a co winner.
Yeah. Biggest flopper is the biggest flopper in the NBA these days. Good to them. Give the Sportsmanship Award. So I guess those are our picks. We once again apologize to, or do we want to do the all teams, like all NBA all rookie teams? Can you think of that many players off the top of your head?
No, not really. They'd probably all just be Warriors players anyway.
Well, we are in the age of giving a player of the week to the Atlanta Hawks, so who knows? Who knows what we're doing these days?
Shout out to Damari Carroll, the only one that wasn't an All-Star.
Mm. Kind of feel a bit lonely there, but I guess he got the player of the week. So he goes down in history either way. So I guess that brings us to the end of episode number 248 of the NLSC podcast. We hope you enjoyed it. If you did, we encourage you to subscribe to the show on iTunes. You can also find us on various podcast catcher apps, including Stitcher. Just search for NLSC podcast through those apps and you will find us. Or keep streaming the show on the NLSC itself. You can also connect with us on social media. We're on Twitter @the NLSC. We're on Facebook, facebook.com/the NLSC. We're on Instagram, NLSC Basketball. And of course, keep it locked to the NLSC itself, NBA-live.com, for everything we do for basketball video games. But that is going to do it for this week. We will be back next time to talk about the conference finals and other things that are going on in the basketball gaming world. But until then, I'm Andrew.
And I'm Kenny.
And we're out like a coach who won 59 games and then got swept in the playoffs.